Chris and the guys at Greenview Construction LLC are a firm offering professional services in design and, of course, construction. And they are proud to announce that they've completed design and 3D renderings for two spec home models located in the Jupiter and Palm Beach Gardens area, sitting on over 1 acre lots. Now, they've got four lots available for these model homes. The first is a British West Indies model style, totaling just over 4,500 square foot, air-conditioned space, five bedrooms, five bathrooms, and they boast 16-foot ceilings in some areas. The second, more traditional style home, 3,100 square foot, air-conditioned space, four bedrooms and four baths. They boast 14-foot ceilings in some areas. Both models will have a free-flowing layouts that connect the kitchen, the family room, living room, library, a den, and outdoor lanai. And both models will have an option to add a detached in-law suite if you really want the in-laws to move in, and a garage totaling an additional 1,000 square foot. You can visit Chris and the team online at www.greenviewconstruction.com. You can email Chris Tyson, that's C Tyson, as in Mike Tyson, C Tyson at greenviewconstruction.com. Or you can call 561-727-5013. They're also on Facebook, they're on Instagram, they're on Twitter. Just look for Greenview Construction. And if that wasn't enough, they have an appointment-only showroom at 715 Commerce Way West, Suite 14 in Jupiter, Florida.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage? Looking for a reputable, fully licensed, insured, and certified contractor? Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. When a disaster strikes in your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. With over 62 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, and Eric and their team is prepared to handle any size disaster. The guys are born and raised in South Florida, so changing the narrative on the way contractors conduct business in South Florida is extremely important to them. Their objective is to make cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed building contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. There's no need to bring in other contractors. They will handle it all for you. Call or text them anytime at 561-408-7835 for immediate assistance. The number again, 561-408-7835. Water Cleanup of Florida. This show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is a revolutionary new daily fantasy game whereby you pick 2, 3, or 4 players to go over or under their fantasy point projections, and if you're correct, you win. Pick 2 or more players from the same sport or league, or go cross leagues for your parlay. Use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, 5, and receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. But first, sign up at prizepicks.com to start winning today.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. Simon Clancy is not here. He sent me a picture. He's drinking wine, and he says he'll be back on August 17th. I'm on holiday, he says. Is that wine? Let's look at this picture. Do you have the same picture?
That would be a white wine. That would be, he's drinking.
The man is drinking white wine in Colombia.
Yeah, he's drinking a Pinot Grigio or something.
In Colombia.
In Colombia.
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend that in Colombia. You know what I mean?
Why not? What's wrong with South American wines?
Because their beers are so good.
Well, you know, we're rumored to have, I don't want to alarm our listeners too much, but you know, I'm hearing more and more about a CO2 shortage, which could affect the beer industry.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ. That's just what we need. Okay. All right. I'm ready for the Civil War.
That's it.
I'm done. That's enough. You know what I mean? I've had enough. That's enough. You know, I'll pay $15 a gallon for gas, but you know, you take away my beer, we're gonna have problems, sir.
Yeah. It's
You know what I mean? Of course, we are brought to you by Manscaped. 5RSN, 20% off your entire order. Use that code 5RSN. And of course, Better Edge. That's BETTOR edge.com/ 5, the number 5 reasons, and you get $20 as a sign up bonus. All right, Chris. Yeah, you rattled me with the CO2 shortage. Like, that's a problem.
Even more so. Even more. You're more, you know, and I'm reading a headline that's literally saying craft breweries around the United States. All right. Well, I don't mean to scare you more than anything else that might have happened in the last couple of days upset you more than anything that might have happened in the last couple of days. But yeah, I'm reading an article that's headlining saying that craft breweries around the United States are looking at shutting down because of the carbon dioxide shortage.
Oh, gosh. So,
you know, once you read that, you know, it makes the whole thing.
It puts everything into perspective, right?
Puts everything in perspective about, you know, tampering and draft picks and such. Which yeah. We should talk about.
Well, trust me, listener, we will get into camp. Okay. We'll do a little back and forth on a few players here. I guess the way we'll do it is we'll have Chris interview me. Okay. He'll ask me questions about players and I'll give answers as good as I can. Spoke to Matt Applebaum today and that was interesting, but first we gotta talk about this. We weren't very good at tampering, Chris, because we got caught. And not only did we get caught, but they hammered us. They hit us with, we lost the first round pick. We lost the third round pick.
It is so utterly stupid that it can only be the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, like we can't do this right. Like we, somebody had, look, not to pile on, it's easy to pile on Stephen Ross, okay?
Well, it's obvious. He made it easy.
Okay. I want to pile on Bruce Beal a little bit more. Okay.
Yeah.
Like he's not even in charge yet. And he's getting suspended for a year. Okay. And fined $500,000, which to be fair, you find Bruce Beal for $500,000. It's like finding us 50, you know what I mean?
That's like pocket change.
Yeah. But the, you know, it's not really, you know, yeah, it's pocket change, but you know, that goes into your mark, that goes into your record. Like, mm-hmm. Roger Goodell and the owners, they know already you did some funny business, you know, mm-hmm. on Tom Brady and Sean Payton. Tom Brady more specifically in 2019, then 2020, and then 2021. So if it's not that bad, you know, if that wasn't bad enough, they decided, you know what, let's do something Sean Payton as well.
Yeah, let's just compound it. Let's get in there. Let's really
get in there. When I heard it right away, and look, I was in the stands and we were watching practice and the news broke to us up there. Okay. Like nobody had that, you know, the scoop. Like that came to us and everybody had it at the same exact time. We started commenting on it. First 5 minutes, I was like, get the fuck out of here. They're taking away a first and a third for this. This is absolute nonsense. I gave it a little bit more thought. 2016, we talked about this on OnlyFans. Kansas City Chiefs, 3 days before free agency. Mm-hmm. They tampered with Jeremy Maclin. 3 days. That's it. Just 3 days. Andy Reid got fined. Their GM Dorsey got fined. They took away a third and a sixth.
Mm.
If you believe in precedent, we kind of got off either right or kind of a little light. No?
Well, like, I mean, it's weird.
You got to accept it and move on, right? Like, hey,
well,
you know,
I think a lot of people are kind of operating under the, you know, everybody does it. Why this is unfair that the Dolphins are getting this kind
not
of.
Not everybody gets caught.
Well, not everybody. You're right. Not everybody gets caught. And I said, this reminds me so much of that scene in Office Space where Peter and Samir and Michael Bolton are sitting around a kitchen table trying to figure out how to launder money. And they're looking up money laundering in the dictionary, in the Merriam-Webster dictionary.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, a guy comes by selling magazines and he claims that he's like a reformed, you know, drug dealer and he's selling these magazines. And so they like immediately pull him in and they're like, you know, trying to quiz him on how do you launder money? Like, this is so stupid the way that the Dolphins did this. And it's just, you know, yes, because the bottom line is I'm sure everybody in the league to some extent does this with tampering in some way, in some shape or form, but they don't get caught. and they know how to do it. And it seems like every team knows how to do it except for the Miami Dolphins. The Miami Dolphins are just like, well, if everybody does it, then the rule doesn't exist. And we can just be absolutely brazen about it and just, you know, go ahead and full bore and not care who knows what and not care what kind of paper trail there is or whatever. And it's so stupid. And here's why the penalty is severe for Miami. The penalty is severe for Miami because, you know, you talked about the Kansas City Chiefs tampering with Jeremy Maclin like 3 days before free agency. Mm-hmm. There were direct conversations happening with Tom Brady going back to like August of 2019, before the 2019 season even began. Mind you, he was a New England Patriot at that time. All right. And he was getting ready for the 2019 season as a New England Patriot. And, you know, he had an upcoming offseason in 2020 that he was going to have where he was going to make a decision. Do I stay with the Patriots or do I go?
This deserves its own movie, to be honest with you.
Right. Honestly. And so before that season even started, evidently the Miami Dolphins, you know, through Bruce Beal were texting with him and possibly Steven Ross. I don't know the details, texting back and forth with him, not his agent, with him before the season even started. And, you know, talking about getting him in Miami when the season is done, and continued to text him all through the friggin' season. I mean, can you imagine Bill Belichick, how much he would have to flip his lid if he finds this out? Because like he won't talk to Eric Mangini at all, because when Eric Mangini was on his staff and he got hired by the New York Jets to be the head coach in the New York Jets, and the New England Patriots were preparing for a Super Bowl, Eric Mangini talked to a few of the assistant staff about, you know, hey, do you want to join me in New York? That was postseason. They're getting ready for the Super Bowl and stuff like that. But this is a common problem that every assistant coach that gets hired for a head coach job has. Like, they know they're a head coach and they have to start building their staff. And you know, to this day, Bill Belichick won't even talk to him because like a few weeks before he was to take the New York Jets job, he you know, he's talking to some assistants, you know, hey, about joining him there. Well, can you imagine how pissed off he and other people have to be that the Dolphins were talking to Tom Brady a full year before he might hit free agency, you know? And it's so friggin' stupid, because it's like, how do you have direct paper trail? How do you have direct paper trail with this guy? You go through and be smart about it. You go through and here's what you do. Don Yee is his agent, right? Yep. Don Yee is, and they got in trouble for communications with Don Yee as well. Here's what you don't do. Direct text messages back and forth with Tom Brady, because you know, people are like, I'm going all over the place and I'm sorry, but I'm ranting. Brian Flores thing, people are going off on Brian Flores. He's a snitch. He ratted us out. The only reason they investigate is because of Brian Flores, you know, and him with his lawsuit and stuff like that. Well, you know what? Guess what? Anything can spur the investigation about tampering. Okay. If the New England Patriots are like, we think there was tampering, They could submit a claim to the league. They could submit a complaint to the league, and the league might start the same sort of independent investigation that revealed all of this. And you know what? The Sean Payton thing was completely incidental, right? Like, I don't think anybody submitted a complaint about Sean Payton. I don't think anybody, you know, there's nothing about Sean Payton, I don't think, and Brian Flores' lawsuit. So when they're going through all these communications and going through their independent investigation, they just found the Sean Payton thing in addition to it. So here's what you don't do. You don't leave a paper trail of direct text messages back and forth with the player. You don't leave a paper trail of direct text messages back and forth with the agent. Here's what you do. I'm going to talk to Don Yee about, you know, I'll just going to make up a player, Grover Stewart or whatever, you know, who happens to be, you know, a player that
Brady Tom represents.
Whatever, Brady Tom. I don't, yeah. Make some name up, Brady Jensen, or something like that. We're going to talk to him about this player who is available, who is legal to be talked about.
Or talking code, then, use another Michigan quarterback.
Then on the phone, when you're on the phone with the guy, maybe then you start asking, you know, hey, what's, you know, what's the deal with Tom? You know, what's, and
I would use a payphone.
You don't even have to be that tinfoil hat about it. You put it in your appointment, in your appointments, speaking to Don Yee about Grover Jensen, you know, and then you have a phone conversation with him about something else. Okay. And, or maybe, hey, we're going to a steak dinner tonight and we're going to have a few drink and we're going to have a few glasses of wine. And then we're going to be like, hey, so about
Sean Payton. and then you tell Stephen Ross, you go wink wink, you know who's going to be at this dinner, right? Drew Henson will be at this dinner.
Well, I'm just, frankly, you don't even want to directly involve Steve Ross in this anyway, but I'm just saying you be smart about it. You use intermediaries. You don't put things on paper trail so that, you know, if somebody complains, an investigation ensues and then you have to turn over communications. You have to do that, you know? It's so mind-bogglingly stupid how they got caught with this and how they were so brazen about it. Tampering with Tom Brady, like consistently over the course of like 3 years or some garbage like that. And then with the Sean Payton thing, you know, they talked to Sean and the NFL made a point to say this. They talked to Sean Payton before he retired from the Saints. Okay. And that is important because you know who else suddenly retired this year?
Everybody was retiring.
Tom Brady suddenly retired this year. So, and you know what stood in the way of, you know, who stood in the way of this, you know, this idea born out of boredom, I guess, of pulling in both Sean Payton and Tom Brady in the same offseason. You know who stood in the way of that? The New Orleans Saints and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because mm-hmm. you were never going to be able to get Sean Payton unless the New Orleans Saints said, yes, we will give you Sean Payton.
And Ian Rappaport says that we could have unloaded a briefcase of draft picks on the Bucs desk and they would have said no.
Exactly. The Bucs were 1,000% against it. Bruce Arians was 1,000% against it. They had publicly indicated that and privately indicated that to many people. They were 1,000% against it. And you know what you can't do? You know, and it came out later. They're talking about like it with the whole ownership thing, like Tom Brady's going to be a partial owner and then come back and be a player. In order to do that, he would have had to get approval from all 32 NFL owners. Which was never going to happen. And so you're not going to get Tom Brady away from the Buccaneers because he's under contract with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
So what you're saying, just to tie this all up, is that this was the Ocean's 11 caper, but they got caught inside the vault.
I mean, this is so much worse than the Ocean's 11. This is the Ocean's 11 caper if it was being executed by the same guys who were in The Hangover. You know, like this was absolutely repugnantly stupid.
They gotta make a movie out of this.
You could because
or an after school special.
And so they're sitting here and they're trying to cook up these schemes with Sean Payton and Tom Brady, and the Saints are standing in the way because they're not giving up Sean Payton, and the Bucs are in the way because they're not giving up Tom Brady. And so they tried to it certainly looks conspicuous that there's some power plays tried to be pulled by having these guys suddenly retire on the team and give the team no choice but we might as well get something for these guys. And you know, the Bucs called the bluff, the Saints called the bluff, the Dolphins got neither one of them, and then they lost first and third round draft picks. That's how stupid this is. and you know what, they frankly they deserve it. They deserve every bit of the punishment to me. Because if any of these conversations they were having with Tom Brady influenced him to temporarily retire on the Buccaneers, then that did the Buccaneers damage. If any of these conversations with Sean Payton influenced his decision to retire from the Saints for a year, that damaged the Saints. And that's why, you know, you're like, this is an unbelievable amount of draft resources being taken away from the Dolphins. Everybody else got away with a slap on the wrist, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's because of how, I mean, Roger Goodell said it. This is the most egregious case of this that he's ever seen. And it was. And so because in terms of calendar timeline and how long before free agent such they're talking to these guys and how nefarious the scheme may have actually been to where it might have actually injured these teams, the Saints and Buccaneers, by getting the people to retire. And so, like, yeah, they lost first and third round picks, and Steve Ross can't come back until October or something like that.
He comes back game seven. So he suspended six games. He comes back against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah. And, well, yeah. So, I mean, that's going to be a nice one with Brian Flores on the other sideline. But, but I mean, yeah. So Steve Ross is going to pay a big price for this. Bruce Beal is paying a big price for this. And the Dolphins and Dolphins fans are paying a big price for this, losing first and third round picks. And the bottom line is it's happening because everybody was apparently just deciding to be dumb. And that's why it's so upsetting is, you know, this isn't a matter of, you know, a lot of people will want to think about this and think like, this is the league being unfair on the Dolphins. This is an attempt to distract from the Deshaun Watson thing. This is all because Brian Flores was a snitch. None of those three are true. None of those three are true because, frankly, for all we know, I mean, I don't know. The Saints might have lodged a complaint after all about Sean Payton and tampering. But either way, like, this sort of investigation could have been spurred by a complaint from anybody, not Brian Flores. And also, you know, this was the punishment met the crime. You know, yeah. The punishment seemed appropriate for the crime that was described. No, not every team does what the Dolphins did here.
Now, putting a bow on all this, I do take issue with one thing. I think Don Yee should pay a pretty hefty price. Maybe a one-year suspension by the NFL.
And there's a mechanism for him to do so. I think there's, you know, somebody talked about it on Twitter. Like they asked the question, you know, this was clearly unethical, what Don Yee was doing as well. And so, I mean, I know that the subject of tampering, like the player and the coach,
nothing happens to the coach.
Nothing ever happens to them. That's never been the case in the history of the NFL, as far as I know. But the agent in this case, you know, yeah, there can be some consequences for the agent, and certainly there were consequences for the team. And so, you know, you know, we're sitting here on that day, and all we're doing, we're arguing about like Deshaun Watson and how unfairly light the punishment was for him. And we're arguing about whether the Dolphins should, you know, flip off a sixth or seventh round pick for Tevin Jenkins, who is on the outs in Chicago. We're arguing about stupid, insignificant stuff. And then, bam, you lost first and third round picks.
Yeah, and by the way, a lot of people are saying, you know, you lost your Tua insurance policy. Well, not really, because guess what? If Tua's not that good, you get to sign Tom Brady for real, because he's a free agent.
Yeah, I mean, when he's a proper free agent.
This time, don't screw it up. If it happens to go down that way, don't screw it up. Right.
Well, you know, it's actually devastatingly simple. Like, don't leave a paper trail about it, and don't do it a year or a year and a half in advance. You know, like you have some contact. I mean, everybody knows that there's contact that's happening before the quote unquote legal tampering period of free agency, which is only like what, 48 hours before the start of free agency. You know, and so everybody knows that happens, but not a year and a half. You know, And so I, you know, that this is, it sickens me. It really does. Because I was just talking about it too. I was like, you know, I went through on Twitter and I started, because we can go through it. And this is actually kind of fun. Like the last 20 years of just absurdity with the Miami Dolphins, which is mostly centered around the offense, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to when Norv Turner went off. He was here for like 2 years and then he went off, and Dave Wannstedt promotes Joel Collier to be offensive coordinator. And then Joel Collier, like, just inexplicably and suddenly a couple months later steps down. Like, he didn't even quit necessarily. I think he was just like, no, I don't want to be OC anymore. And so, like, so they had to scramble around and ended up making Chris Foerster, yes, that guy, the offensive coordinator for a year, along with Mark Trestman. And then you got the Ricky retirement, and then you got like the shenanigans around Cam Cameron and the Ted Ginn family, fail forward fast.
And then you have the great Ricky return, and then he's suspended for a year for weed.
Yeah, and then you've got Bullygate with Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito. You got blow up dolls with Jim Turner, the offensive line coach.
You got the fine book that the offensive line was keeping, $100 for farting. Remember all that?
Oh God. Yes. But you know, at least that's just good fun.
and there is, well, I don't know if it's good fun, because you know, some were speculating that Richie Incognito was inflating a lot of those fines, you know what I mean? Like, you know, he had his own scheme going on that fine book.
I mean, and think about it.
It was him, and also, of all people, it was him and Mike Pouncey in charge of the fine book, of all people.
Well, think about also the go versus go-go thing of the Philbin error. There's Chris Foerster Redux, right?
Yes.
Chris Foerster is back with the team, and now he's doing cocaine off the work desk.
The sequel was better.
Trust me. Yeah, and you've got the Culpepper Breeze. Okay. Or there's that, you know, hiring Chan Gailey out of retirement,
the Jim Harbaugh gambit twice.
But at least that wasn't just on offense, but I mean, it was embarrassing shenanigans. The Chan Gailey thing, I particularly loved about bringing him out of retirement was him admitting that when he retired, he threw away all of his coaching notebooks and materials. Yes. So he was just like coming in clean, like, you know, hey, let's do some football, you know, like, and then of course they hire
a tyrant that hates everybody in the building except the defensive staff. He likes those
guys. and dismisses all offensive line coaches like every single week.
Yes.
And then you have the co offensive coordinator situation. You have the flirtation with a sexual predator. All right. And I spoke
to Pat Flaherty for 15 minutes. And he was fired 3 days later.
Wasted 15 minutes. You'll never get those 15 minutes.
I'll never get those 15 minutes of my life ever. But I'll never get them back.
And so, like, I laid all this out on Twitter, and I was like,
Coach Googs mysteriously disappearing. Where is he?
Where
is there any evidence that he's alive?
I don't know.
If somebody knows if Coach Googs is.
Well, you know, Greg Little resurfaced. So maybe DeGuglielmo. But I mean, and so then you have, I'm like, well, maybe I said one wonders if we're due for a nice normal one.
Hey, by the way, let's talk about Coach Googs at least for the next 30 seconds. He was here one day and then it was ta-da, he's no longer here. What was that about?
And hasn't he been here like three times?
Yes, he has. But this was a weird one. He's running around out there screaming at our offensive line, doing Coach Googs type of things. And then all of a sudden one day he's not here.
We don't get a break as Miami Dolphins fans over the last 20 years. We don't get a break from the embarrassment, from the shenanigans, from the controversy, from the being a league clown, essentially. Yes. I mean, and I hate to put it in such strong words, but we are, like, the team has been a clown show for 20 years. We get these massive national public black eyes, like just continuously, and I'm like, well, maybe we're due for something normal for a change. Nope. You know, like, now we got this. And so, you know, I don't know, you know, and somebody put it to me, actually, and it was really interesting. And he was like, you know, hey, you follow baseball a little bit. And he was talking about, he's like, you know, in the early 90s, in the Major League Baseball suspended George Steinbrenner for hiring a private eye and possible mobster to tail Dave Winfield so that they could screw him on a contract. And he said that Steinbrenner obviously notoriously was a meddlesome, you know, owner. Meddlesome, that owner was not the word that was used to me, but and he was banned from the daily operations of the Yankees. Well, while he was banned, Stick Michaels was able to operate freely as the general manager, and he drafted and acquired all the guys that made up the late 90s Yankees dynasty, like Jeter and Pettit, Posada, Rivera, you know, all these guys.
Yeah,
he's like, Steinbrenner got all the, this person's like, you know, maybe this is a blessing in disguise. Steve Ross isn't allowed in the building.
Well, he is allowed to watch the games, according to Barry.
He's allowed to watch the games. I don't know where he's going to watch them. He's going to watch them from the stands or something. I don't. Maybe he's still got his owner's box. Who knows? But he's not allowed in the Benning. He's not allowed to be part of day to day operations.
No.
So what sort of things might Greer and McDaniel think about, like, while he's not allowed to say anything?
Well, they get free reign in the building now, right?
And which also is, who's the ranking owner now?
I don't know about that. We think it's Fergie. It's possible. It could be Mark Anthony. It could be Venus Williams and Serena. Venus and Serena.
Could be. I mean, does Fergie have seniority?
That's the thing. I don't know how that would work. It could be Jennifer Lopez, you know.
I mean, Bruce Beal is still the ranking owner, a part owner.
But he's gone for a year.
He's not really gone. He's not allowed to the owners' meetings.
Yes.
So he's not allowed to go to the owners' meetings. And so I asked Barry Jackson, who works for a South Florida newspaper, and I asked him, you know, okay, is there an owners meeting before Steve Ross is allowed back? And if so, who represents the owners? Because Bruce Beal's not allowed to.
I checked the schedule, and there's nothing. There isn't.
Yeah. And actually, Barry did get back to me. He said nobody, none of them would. It would be Tom Garfinkel though. that would represent the Dolphins in that case.
Yeah, but the move is to have Jennifer Lopez show up on Friday. Because by the way, there is no practice on Thursday. August 4th, no practice day. It's a day off for the players. They return to practice on August 5th, which is Friday. The move is to have Jennifer Lopez there 8 a.m. doing a press conference saying, I'm in charge now. I'm in charge until October 17th. What a coup would that be?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Is that the move or what?
That's the move. Well, I mean, I have nothing against the Williams sisters, you know.
Have all of them up there. All of them up there. Bring them all up.
And frankly, we always thought that this. I don't want to be rough on Steven Ross. Like, you know, I know his heart is generally in the right place. You know, in this case, you know, there's been a lot of fans that have been. He's just trying to improve the team, and I get it. But you know,
and he has done wonders with the stadium, with the area around it.
Sure, yeah, sure. But one wonders, you know, if we go back to when he first rolled out, you know, quote unquote, the orange carpet and the part ownership, the celebrity part ownership thing. And we were all like, kind of like, oh God, this is a circus. This is a clown show. One wonders if those celebrity owners would have collectively been less of a clown show if they were actually in charge compared to the people that did end up in charge.
Yeah, and this beautiful training facility. It's awesome. It's absolutely awesome.
It's great. It's great. I'm really glad that Steve Ross is committed to improving the Dolphins any way he can. And I would like very much if he just stepped away from all operations.
Unless he has to write a check, you know what I mean?
Well, unless he has to sign a check. And that's nothing against him. You know, I'm not saying we would be better, but yeah, it's maddening is what it is.
It is. All right, very briefly before we transition to training camp, Deshaun Watson got the same suspension that Steven Ross got.
Yeah.
Okay. which is interesting in and of itself.
Which is interesting because
but you know, the NFL is appealing. The NFL is saying the NFL is appealing to the NFL, and then the NFL yeah. would decide for the NFL yeah. if the NFL would revisit the NFL's original ruling by an NFL independent arbiter. Are you seeing what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I see what you're getting at. And it's such a funny process, but it was negotiated.
Like, that's like we have a dispute inside of 3 yards per carry, and I'm going to consult with Simon Clancy, who's going to consult with Chris Kaufman, who's going to consult with Alfredo Arteaga.
So, I mean, it was agreed on by the NFL and the NFL Players Association. It's an improvement off of the old system where it was literally, you know, Roger Goodell making the punishment decision and then the Players Association appealing the punishment to himself to appeal his decision. It's just but this is the system that it is. There are some I guess guardrails on what Goodell can do in this appeal, like the factual findings by Sue L. Robinson, who was put in charge of hearing the both sides of this case from Deshaun Watson. The factual findings of by her are binding. So if she found, you know, doubt, reasonable doubt, or, you know, that's not quite the standard. The standard was preponderance of evidence. But if she found doubt about the veracity of the allegations against him, and she put that in her ruling, then Goodell his hands would be tied. You know, he can't change the facts of the case. He can't, yeah. He can't change the factual findings by Sue Robinson. But she didn't, she actually found, she applied the same standard that you would find in court in a civil case. And she found it more likely than not that Deshaun Watson did it. Essentially, that he contacted these women he knew that it was unwanted sexual contact, that he knew it, and that he intentionally did it. It wasn't accidental. He intentionally did it, and he did sexually assault them. She found that he did it, but then she handed down a 6-game sentence that was, and she went through all this, this reasoning, some of which I don't love, but you know, she went through all this reasoning that was basically like, listen, because the NFL has been so bad on this in the past, I have my hands tied. I can only give him a 6-game sentence, a 6-game punishment. And that itself is the worst punishment that has ever been given to a player for, you know, quote unquote, nonviolent sexual misconduct, which is 100% true, is 100% true, and also really sad, mm-hmm. you know, in the NFL's history. And she basically was like, this is the bed that you've made and you have to sleep in it. And it's not really fair to start changing the rules after the fact. And, you know, and not give the players fair warning that you're applying like sort of a new standard on the sexual misconduct. And I think that they are trying to apply a new standard. They are trying to get tougher on it, which they should have been all along. But she was like, you know, listen, I'm her mandate was such that she had to do this based on the past punishments. And so she did. And so now the NFL gets to say, well, thank you for the factual findings that he did it. Thank you for agreeing with us 100% that he did it. And we're going to decide what the punishment is.
And it'll probably be a year.
And it will be. It'll be.
And Deshaun Watson will be very, very smart to just take the year and then mm-hmm. keep your money next year.
Well, and here's why.
Not to look at it coldly, but that's the way.
Here's why it'd be smart. Well, first off, it's probably going to be a year, which means indefinite. A year suspension is actually an indefinite suspension in the NFL. It means that you're kicked out of the NFL, and then the next year you have to apply for reinstatement. And you know what? The NFL might say no. Mm-hmm. So because what they do is when they kick you out indefinitely like that for a year, and then you apply for reinstatement, they usually put conditions on your reinstatement. And so what the NFL says is in order to get reinstated, you have to complete these conditions after a year. So that's what a year suspension really means, is it's like code for being able to slap conditions on reinstatement onto Deshaun Watson. And what sort of conditions might they slap on Deshaun Watson for reinstatement? Well, some obvious ones. I mean, when he got into his, every time he's spoken publicly about this, he has expressed zero remorse. He mm-hmm. has expressed zero contrition. He said that he did nothing wrong, that people asked him, have you, you know, sought help? You know, because clearly if you're going to like 60 different Instagram masseuses in a year, then, you know, there's a problem there. And you're touching them with your penis, then there's a problem there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that the NFL will put conditions on him that make him say, you know, he is going to have to admit he has a problem. He is going to have to seek help in earnest. And that's what I think is really going on with the NFL's insistence on it being at least a year, is they want the reinstatement process. And I think they want the conditions, and he would be wise to just eat it, because yep. Ironically, he might have screwed himself with the Cleveland contract. I mean, infamously, the Cleveland Browns gave him a contract fully guaranteed, but the first year was written in such a way that he would not lose virtually no money for 2022 if he had to be suspended in games in 2022. Like that's the way the contract was written, and they did it on purpose. And it was part of the leverage of Deshaun Watson and his agent trying to get the most money possible. But he also may have kind of screwed himself, because the NFLPA is ready to take this to court, like real court. Hmm. You know, like if they don't like Roger Goodell's final decision on the appeals process, they're ready to take this to court. But Deshaun Watson is going to have to sit here and say and decide, you know, if he goes for, you know, what they call preliminary injunction against the NFL, preventing them from enforcing the suspension until they go to real court and hash this all out. Then he's going to end up, if he loses that, if he ends up losing in court eventually when they hash it all out, then he's going to end up serving suspension time in 2023 instead of 2022. And guess what happens in 2023? He loses real ass money.
Yeah, like $40 million
worth. Yeah, like $40 million. Like in 2022, if he's suspended, he's going to lose like what, $300,000?
Yeah.
In 2023, if he's suspended, he's going to lose like a lot of money. So if you're Deshaun Watson, you're like, am I going to seek a preliminary injunction to prevent me getting suspended, and then, you know, show up week one and play, and, you know, while this is all getting tied up in the courts? Ezekiel Elliott did it. I don't think he'll be successful if he does seek it. But second, like, why would you do that? Why would you risk that?
And by the way, what Ezekiel Elliott did that season ended up burying the Cowboys season, because he got suspended at the end of the season when they were in a playoff chase.
Oh yeah, I know. I had him in fantasy that year. I think that he won't want to seek that preliminary if he's being rational. And this is where it goes back to, you know, you have to go back to the fact that he did this at all, that he did all this at all, the you know, the pathological behavior that fed into this, and his constant, like, you know, some very curious decisions he made along the way, like his attitude about never settling and stuff like that, and how he was always going to have his day in court, and everybody was going to find that, you know, he's completely innocent, and these 25 to 30 women or whoever many are all just lying and stuff like that. Like, he was delusional this whole time. And if he continues to be delusional, and then he seeks that preliminary injunction, which I almost wish happens at this point, and he gets granted it, and then he loses the final court battle, then he's going to lose so much more money. And so it would be really a bad sign probably for the Cleveland Browns if he does seek that out, because it means that your quarterback is actually just a crazy person. Like your quarterback is actually not all there.
Right.
And that's a very real possibility at this point that he is a sociopath. Because some of the activities that he engaged in, the pattern of activities he engaged in, fit with that. And if you're Cleveland Browns, you're hoping that they just eat it too, that they just go ahead and serve the suspension this year and that's it. And if you're Deshaun Watson, logically, you should be hoping for that. Or you should be aiming for that as well. But I think the NFL will go ahead and suspend him for the year. And it's just going to be fascinating to see what happens from there.
Yeah. And what I don't understand is Major League Baseball, who notoriously has the strongest union in all of sports. They have a guy with one sexual assault allegation, Trevor Bauer, gets suspended for 2 seasons, 324 games, loses about $65 million of actual money, because all of that is guaranteed.
That's a lot of money.
Okay. Now, that's a real suspension. Two full seasons and $65 million on one allegation.
And the NFL is very aware of that. They're very aware of that suspension. And they've talked about it, like, you know, kind of sort of behind the scenes anonymously with reporters and such. Like, they're aware of that suspension and what it will do to shape public expectations of what Deshaun Watson should get.
Yeah. All you got to do is read the NFL comms, they have their charter there. They have their governing documents. And first of all, let me say that the governing documents of the NFL are pretty bad. Like, I don't know who the hell wrote those things. Okay, but I've read some construction contracts that are much more detailed and definitive than what those NFL governing documents are. Okay, but it states very, very simply, it's one of the opening paragraphs. There are no rights to employment in the NFL. This is a privilege. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's as if it's like this podcast. You and me have no right whatsoever to make money at this podcast, but if we can, it's a good thing, right? Like,
we can, it's great. If somebody decides to pay us, then, you know, great.
Yeah. That's how the NFL is supposed to be. It's a privilege. It's, you are not entitled to employment. You really aren't. Okay. You're a professional quarterback. Guess what? There's other leagues where you could go make money. It's as simple as that for Deshaun Watson. All right. Moving on. There's a camp going on. And the team,
you know, I'll be damned, is there?
Yeah, and they look pretty good. Like, this is a good football team, Chris.
That's the real shame of it. That's the real shame of it, because this has been by all accounts a good start, at least for the offense, anyway.
Yes,
and Tua's good dealing. a good start to camp, and we don't see that very often with the offense in Miami in over the last 20 years or so. You know, how many times every single year we say the same thing? Defense is always ahead of the offense this time of year.
I will say this. Today, Tyreek Hill had a load management day. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he was doing his Teron Armstead impersonation, which is just walk around in gear, you know what I mean? But not do too much and talk to a bunch of people. There's a different feel, man, without that guy out there. Different feel. They're just,
you know, which should surprise energy. Exactly, which should surprise exactly nobody.
Yes. Right?
I mean, like, this is why, this is literally why you traded for him.
Yeah, he just makes the team go, man. It's a ball of energy, man. You know, and by the way, you could tell, by the way, Xavier Howard also on that Teron Armstead plan. Yeah. Okay. I was told that they do this in San Francisco. And guess what? I guess we're bringing it over here. If you're a really, really good player, you're just not going to participate too much. You know what I mean?
Oh, you know, and to their credit, you know, I didn't think San Francisco was going to be great this year, and they ended up in the NFC Championship. So stupid me. Yeah. So one of the reasons that I didn't think that they were going to be great this year is I'm looking across that roster and I'm like, you know, you got a lot of old guys. Like, you got a lot of old guys that are like, that you're guys counting on. These are your dickers. Some, you know, injuries stuff in their past. Yeah. So their whole load management strategy.
Yeah, it works.
Works. Or it works
absolutely
for them.
Absolutely. And I loved Mike McDaniel's first comments as in training camp as the head coach of the Miami Dolphins were, we expect Byron Jones to play week one, and we won't do anything to jeopardize that.
Mm-hmm.
which is okay. That's great. That's great. Like, you know, I don't give a crap if he's going to play against the Raiders or the Bucks here in 2 weeks or next week. Like, I don't give a crap. I don't need Byron Jones out there, you know, guarding Mike Evans. Although I don't think Mike Evans is going to play, but you know, I do want him out there week one for Devontae Parker and Kendrick Bourne or whoever the hell else the Patriots have out there. So what do you want to know? Shoot questions my way, Chris.
All right, Alf. All right. So you've been in camp the entire, let's be clear for the listeners too. You've been there every single day,
every single minute, every single second of every single snap.
In fact, even earlier, as I recall, one of the practices, you got there insanely early and were called out on that by Mike McDaniel himself.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
I was wandering around the practice facility. I'm like, why is there nobody here?
and Mike McDaniel just sidles up next to you and is like, what does he say?
He said, you're here early. So, yes.
Well, okay. So you've been there every single day. I'm sure you've been paying attention to the offense quite a bit. Let's go let's start with the obvious because, you know, everybody wants to know about Tua and everything's always on him, which I kind of disagree with, but I mean, it is the thing that we talk about. Like what has really been sure, we see the clips. We see, you know, a big throw here, a big throw there. And there's a lot of hype about Tua, and there always has been. He's got a lot of backers. But what's he really been performing like?
Okay, if this is a very, very oddly specific prop bet, but if I can find this, I would make this bet. I'm willing to bet that Tua Tagovailoa will lead the league in passer rating out of play action.
Really?
Is that crazy? Jared Goff did it 1 year. Jared Goff did it 1 year. I think Tua can do it this year. No?
No, that's not crazy.
Who led the league last year? And that's a good question. If you have it at your fingertips, I have it. And I don't know where even to begin to look for that.
I know where to look for it, and I can figure that out if you give me just a minute. But like, I will say this, that it is it would be a significant, maybe even a symbolic change considering, you know, what everybody's been saying about Tua and RPOs, you know, you know, he's an RPO quarterback. And so I think that it'll be interesting if now we're switching from he's getting all this because the big thing that, you know, all the stat nerds out there, and I'm one of them, but like, you know, all the stat nerds analytics guys will bring up is the, like, you know, Tua did a lot of damage on RPOs. Really, really good amount of damage on RPOs, but he did poorly, I guess, on non-RPO plays, right? And so I think that that would be what people use against him, and so how's that transition going? You're saying it's going well.
Absolutely. And if I were to say what kind of offense this is, you know, not to get too specific, but I gave it a lot of thought, started watching, you know, some of the stuff that I have on these guys. 2016 Atlanta Falcons rings a bell. That was a Kyle Shanahan offense. I would say the passing game is 2016 Atlanta Falcons. The running game is absolutely 2021 49ers. Okay. I think that's what they're kind of running. And I just got to say, those two wide receivers, it makes all the difference in the world. If I had to say some definitive things, we have a hard time blocking Raekwon Davis, Christian Wilkins, and Zach Sealer. We just do.
Well, hopefully you would.
But most teams would anyway, right?
I hope so.
So that's been a chore, I would say, all camp. It's been hard to block those three guys. It just has been. Okay. But Austin Jackson looks like a different player. He really does.
Well, before we get to Austin Jackson, we will get to him in a minute, but I want to follow up on Tua with you. Because Joe Shad of the Palm Beach Post just said earlier today, he just kind of declared it very emphatically. He's like, Tua's arm is stronger. There, yes. I said it.
Absolutely. And I think it has to do with his body. I think it has to do with his body type. It's different. His body type is more baby fat and, you know, on top of the muscle. Last year, he was more vascular, more slim. You know, last year, he kind of looked like a point guard in the NBA. This year, he looks like Russell Wilson. Big booty, yeah. Big legs. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Looks different. He looks like Russell Wilson, really. You know, good base. He looks like a quarterback. A quarterback is not supposed to look like an NBA point guard. He's just
so you
not.
think there's something, there's legs, or there's and forgive the pun, but considering you just talked about his legs, there's legs to this thing that his arm strength may have appreciably gotten better in this.
It could be as simple as his mechanics are back in tune with what they're supposed to be.
And sure, his mechanics did get off. I mean, his mechanics, we did see him throw off balance off the back foot and such, and start to be really scared of that offensive line last year. So I think that'd be an interesting development. Okay, moving on to the second most important thing on everybody's mind, what you just tried to talk about with the offensive line, and particularly on the offensive line, how is the Austin Jackson at right tackle experiment going? Is it as tragic as I have always thought that it would be?
No. It actually looks all right. Now,
so you're telling me I'm full of shit.
Yeah, for now you are. You know, through seven practices, this guy's going to be good. Maybe not great, but he's going to be good. Like, you know, he's not going to be bad. You know,
wouldn't that just be the thing?
You know, he's going to be good. Like, you know, through seven practices, he looks good. I don't remember him getting smoked off the edge. Mm-hmm. Any one time, I do remember other people getting smoked off the edge that were not named Austin Jackson.
Interesting.
But he looks good. Like, you know, and what I found, I gave him my player of the day for day six. He was hitting blocks on screens. He was getting out and he was hooking tight ends that were, you know, one lane over from him. He was kicking out on cornerbacks. He was pretty active. He's moving. And one thing you can notice about it, and Robert Hunt just basically he let the cat out of the bag. He said, look, I wasn't told. I just knew. I knew the system we were running, and I decided I'm going to get 15 pounds lighter. Yeah. And Robert Hunt, volunteered today that he saw, okay, they hired Mike McDaniel. He's a 49er guy. I'm going to get 15 pounds lighter.
And he did play in this scheme in college. He knows what's demanded of it.
Yeah, he says, I knew I was going to run as soon as they hired Mike McDaniel, so I started dropping weight, and that's why I'm thinner now, and that's why I'm sleeker. And he's also had some noticeable, some noticeable moments as well. Now, they can't block those three guys on our interior defensive line, but again, I don't expect anybody to block those guys. And I'll tell you one thing. I was a skeptic on Connor Williams. He does have to fix his hasn't been tragic. Okay. Like he's not, what was the name of that guy? Matt Skura. He's not Matt Skura. Okay.
Matt Skura.
It's just that, you know, the snaps are, you know, you ideally want him for a left-handed quarterback. You want him on his left nipple, right? You want the ball on his left nipple.
Right.
Okay. You know, he's snapping it to his neck or his right nipple. You know what I mean? Or to his mouth. It's not perfect every time. But it hasn't been tragic. Like, you know, the ball's getting to Tua and Tua's delivering passes. So he's doing a fine job in that regard. But I finally see the wisdom. I see what they were thinking. Like, I understand now. And we should have seen it coming, I think, when they signed Connor Williams. I think it just makes absolute sense. And to be fair, if there is no Michael Dieter, they have no other center on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Dieter is in a walking boot right now. Although coach seemed to believe that he'll be ready to go for the regular season. He is the backup center, and now they've got to experiment with other guys back there. But Connor Williams, would you say? I mean, I think clearly from an athletic standpoint, we know that for this system, he's well fit for the system from an athletic standpoint, but you've brought up his snapping, which I think is important because, you know, one of the positives of Tua Tagovailoa as a quarterback is how quickly he gets into his actions and how quickly he gets in, you know, how snappy he is. And it's hard to be snappy if the snaps are coming in kind of iffy, right? Like if the snaps are coming in right on target and perfect, then you're able to get into it split seconds faster. And the other thing is he's learning, Tua is learning a new offense, completely new offense. And the more he has to think about, the worse it's going to look like. And if he has to start thinking about the snap, then it's not going to look as good. But what does Connor Williams look like to you from a communication standpoint? Because that's the really big thing with this offense is the communication, identifying the defense, identifying the run fit, seeing how particularly they use so much motion. You know, they use so much motion. And the reason they're using the motion often is to see how the linebackers shift and how the run fits are going to have to change. And based on what those linebackers show, you know, on the motion and things like that, the offensive line could have like completely different action. You know, they're going to have to communicate with each other. How's the communication looked with it? Like, how's this leadership and the sort of the intangible things out there for Connor Williams?
Oh, that's been noticeable. And I'm a sucker for those things. But to be fair, Michael Dieter's also very good at that. He's very good at organizing the huddle. Okay. He's very good at getting guys lined up and picking up who has to pick up who. So to be fair, Michael Dieter's also very good at that. Connor Williams is evidently very, very smart guy. We all knew about, you know, we knew about his Wonderlic score. What was it?
Like very high. It was like a 34, something like that.
Yeah. So, so evidently he's, you know, he's a pretty smart guy, and you could tell when, you know, he does his media availabilities. You could see the wheels turning in his head. He's going to make the perfect answer for everything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So very presidential. Okay, so Connor Williams is very presidential in his press conferences. Okay, he's very thoughtful in what he says. So yeah, naturally he's going to be a pretty good leader. He's going to organize the huddle very, very well. So yeah, he's been good, and I see the wisdom. I saw the wisdom when I saw a few practices. I was like, okay, this is what they're thinking. Like, it's so obvious. This is the guy that has to be playing center out of these guys.
Well, then two more quick things on the offensive line before we move somewhere else. The Liam Eichenberg left guard, are we talking, I mean, you know, real quick, are we talking look better than last year, look about the same, just not very noticeable? Like, and then the second thing after that would be, you know, any backups in particular that you want to comment on?
Yeah, Liam Eichenberg, just competent. I'll just say that he looks competent. He's had some bad moments. Remember who he's playing against. He's had some bad moments. I'm sorry. Christian Wilkins is on the verge of stardom if he's not there already. Like, this could be a big year for Christian Wilkins. And it's interesting that they did like their little group interview on NFL Network, and it was Xavier Howard and Javon Holland. And they asked them, who is a guy that the average football fan doesn't know about, but is ready to become a superstar? And they both said Christian Wilkins. Okay. Wow. He's hard to block. He's hard to block. And this is just too much to ask for Liam Eichenberg, in my opinion, but he hasn't been a disaster, which you would expect, right?
Well, to his credit, he walked in there with the orange jersey one day.
Yeah. So he's had his moments. He's been okay. He's been good. As far as backups, Solomon Kinley had a couple of practices where he was really, really good. Mm-hmm. Today I spoke to Matt Applebaum, and I found it really interesting about, I asked him about Kellen Deesh, and I asked him about Blaise Andrews. That's how you spell his name. That's how you pronounce his name, right? Blaise Andrews.
I believe so.
And Kellen Deesh, he went into, his hand placement's good. He has a good kick slide, smart kid. He's picking up the playbook. Although I will say this, I saw one rep, where they did one of those 2x1 rushes on Kellen Deesh, and he picked up the wrong guy. He picked up the outside guy. He's supposed to take the inside guy. That's a huge mistake. You do that in the NFL in the regular season, and your quarterback is Tua. Tua's laid out. Don't do that, Kellen Deesh. Bad Kellen Deesh. Okay.
Bad Kellen Deesh. Bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That wasn't very good. But Matt Applebaum was saying, he's picking up the playbook. He's a smart kid. But I asked him about Blaise Andrews, and he said, he's a people mover. He beats people up. You know, all the stuff that offensive line coaches like to talk about, right?
Oh, okay.
You know,
are you saying that you saw a twinkle in his eye when he talked about Blaise Andrews?
Yeah. Well, yeah. When an offensive line coach starts talking about hand placement, kick slide, athleticism, smarts, forget it. Okay. He's basically saying, you know, there's potential there. But when he talks about a guy who's just out there moving people, okay? Because my question was very simple, and I believe you could get my question on MiamiDolphins.com because I got a very long answer out of Matt Applebaum. But my question was, Kellen Deesh, Blaze Andrews, what do they do well? What have you seen so far? And what can they improve on? Now, on the what can they improve on, Matt Applebaum told me he's going to keep that. He's going to keep that to himself and to those two guys in a meeting room, basically saying, I'm not going to tell you what the hell is wrong with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. He doesn't want to. Well, he doesn't want to trash him.
Of course. But Blaze Andrews, like, it was, he was effusive. He was like, he's a big, strong kid. And if you want to know what he's really good at, he's good at moving people out of the way. And I kept thinking to myself, you know, they could use that. You know what I mean?
They could use that.
You know,
well, I'll tell you what, you're talking about Austin Jackson. He's actually been good. So maybe this is not relevant. But, you know, back when I was thinking that they're just going to have to eventually put Robert Hunt at right tackle. Would you say positive enough on Blaze Andrews that you could see him in that lineup at right guard? If that were to happen.
If
Rob Hunt has to walk out to tackle to replace Austin Jackson, let's say the Austin Jackson, you know, looks good in practice right now. We get into the games and then now he is getting turnstiled, like in pass protection onto his blind side. And so they're like, okay, we have to get a real player in there, Rob Hunt, and have him man to his blind side. And so now they have to have somebody at right guard. Would you say there could be positive enough on Blaze Andrews? I mean, there's guys ahead of him on the depth chart.
Absolutely.
So,
but I can see it, and I can see it. And I'll tell you why, because they have enough elements in this offense where they double the three tech, and O'Connor Williams, Blaze Andrews double, I think would be successful on pretty much any three technique in the NFL.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, Blaze Andrews is, I'm not going to call him one dimensional because he's had some good pass pro snaps, but he's noticeable on one side of the ball. You know what I mean? On one side of the offense, which is the run game. Like, he's really noticeable. Where Kellen Deesh is the opposite. Kellen Deesh is noticeable in pass pro. He's had some good pass pro reps. Although, like I said, Josh Poirier has thrown some wrinkles at him that I don't think he's ready to handle at the NFL level. At least not yet.
Fair.
You know? You know, I want to see him against Tampa Bay. You got to figure they're going to play a lot. Okay. Maybe most of the game. So,
well, I do want to, I want to move on to the wide receivers here and running backs, you know, just real quick. Wide receivers, obviously we know what Tyreek Hill is like. And we've kind of been hearing all about it. It's been very public. We know what kind of player he is anyway. And obviously I think we know that the chemistry between him and Tua is kind of famously coming along pretty well. Jalen Waddle, has been making some noise as well. And have you noticed, I want to ask you two things about the wide receivers. Basically, one, Jalen Waddle, have you noticed any different ways that he's being used in this offense compared to, like, keep in mind last year, what was he? He was a chain mover guy, right?
Yeah.
He's chain mover and the smoke, you know, the little bubble screen type of guy, right? He's that screen guy, but then also third down and moving the chains underneath. He was bottled up by the defense, you know, low yards per catch, which you wouldn't have expected with a guy with his electric abilities, but that's what it was. Is there a difference in how he's being used? Is it deeper? Is it more? Is it bigger plays? Like, how is it? Or is it just feed him ball, the same stuff?
Completely different. He's not being used how he was used last year. Not to, you know, because remember, we are still under.
Right. I get it. Just qualitatively say it's not the same.
Right. And Jalen Waddle is, deeper routes. And Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle, let's just say their roles are interchangeable. And they seem to make a point of it. Point of it, to the point where they had a sequence where they're running a drive against our defense. I guess I could say the number one defense because it was the number one offense. And they ran an end around with Tyreek Hill. And the very next play, they ran an end around with Jalen Waddle.
Good.
Okay, so they seem to be interchangeable. They're both being used exactly the same way. And I think the offense is much better for it. As far as the rest of the wide receivers, I think I'm going to be wrong on Eric Azukama. He's better than I thought. A lot better than I thought. Yeah, he's flashing.
He's making some noise, right?
Yeah, this guy, he has the look of a preseason superstar, and preseason superstars do not get cut or sent to the practice squad, okay? Mm-hmm. They get rostered. And I guess you know where that leaves Preston Williams. And,
right.
And others.
And hence why Preston Williams is complaining. But yes. what about the undrafted free agent Braylon Sanders, who's making some noise as well?
Yeah, another noticeable guy. He the circus catches a lot of about another guy with a lot of energy. Today he was available. He's made available to the media. I only got one question in on him. I got in late because I was in the scrum where Tua was about done with the media. Okay, that's not headed anywhere good. All right, let's just say that the only thing that's going to change that is when Tua starts, you know, playing well in the regular season, and the questions change. But today,
I kind of felt
for him. I didn't like the sequence of questions I was asked of Tua today. It was a marriage question, marriage question, marriage question. Tom Brady, Stephen Ross. Why do people think that your deep ball sucks? Those were the questions.
Okay.
Now you can see how that would irritate you, right?
Yeah, I could see.
Okay.
I got it.
So you could tell he was a little bit agitated. Tua Tagovailoa was agitated, and I was in the scrum because, you know, naturally you got Braylon Sanders and you got Tua Tagovailoa. Where are you going to go? You know? But I walked out on Tua. I was like, you know, enough of this shit already. Like, he looks agitated. I'm not going to get a good question in here. I don't even know what to ask him, really. I'm going to go talk to Braylon Sanders. And, he's a talkative guy. Bright, and he basically mentioned a history with soft tissue injuries at Ole Miss that he feels derailed his college career. So he says that he had to start change the way he eats, the way he trains, and he had to transform his body to be able to play in the NFL.
That's interesting. So, you know, I'll say this about his career at Ole Miss, the last couple of seasons, he had something incredible. Like, it was, you know, the pure yardage was like 900 and some odd yards and maybe 8 touchdowns or something like that, which isn't that necessarily that impressive, but it was on 38 catches, which is pretty insane. He's averaging like 24 yards a catch or 25 yards a catch. And that's fast. You know, that's a fast guy, and he's a fast guy. And, you know, the thing that stands out when you see him, he's fast, but he's got really good body control. Especially you see it with the catches and such, and throwing the hands. I mean, he's infamously got some one-handers now. You know, those three things, it's like, well, there goes a wide receiver in the NFL. Like, there goeth an NFL wide receiver. You have speed, you have body control, and you have hands. Okay, you're done. So he is an interesting one to watch. Is there anything about the running backs, though, that, you know, because to me, running backs training camp, it's never to me that, like, I want to see the games. I want to see full live fire, break the tackle kind of, you know, game work. Is there anything that stands out about the running backs so far to you?
Miles Gaskin has been unnecessarily hit through 2 days, more than I can remember a running back being hit. But I guess that's a credit to him that he's running a little bit more physically, and the defense is considering it and saying, if you're going to do that, we're going to hit you. If you're going to run into us, we're going to hit you. So I guess Miles Gaskin is maybe feeling the footsteps and the pressure and deciding, you know what, I want to stick around this team. But I just don't see it. And I think we've talked about it enough, you know, not to keep beating on old Miles Gaskin, but I don't think he's a fit. Raheem Mostert, you know, it's obvious the speed.
Who do you think is ahead of him right now?
Miles Gaskin?
I don't know. We don't know their official depth chart. Right. And, you know, you can't talk about, like, you know, who was on first team, who's on, but who looks to be ahead of him in your eyes right now?
Chase Edmonds and Raheem Mostert. And I think he's in a battle with Sony Michel for 13.
Okay.
If I had to guess. Okay, you know? And that's just me looking at reps and snaps.
Sure.
You
know? It's taking account of all, it's a mosaic. This is what we would call in my business. This is a mosaic analysis. Basically, you're putting together a lot of, we say this because we don't want to be caught with insider information. You're putting together a lot of pieces from a lot of different places to come away with a mosaic picture of what's going on.
Yeah. And as far as Zaquandre White, and I know that question was coming up, Zaquandre White, I think he's gonna have to be one of those preseason superstars again. You know, we talked about Ezukama as a potential preseason superstar. Maybe Zaquandre White runs for 100 yards next Saturday against the Bucks, because I think that's the only way he's going to get the reps, right?
You know, Mike McDaniel would love that shit.
Yeah, of course.
If he does. Like,
you know? And he's a noticeable athlete. That run. He's a noticeable athlete, but hey, they paid Chase Edmonds, and it's obvious who Chase Edmonds is.
Mm-hmm.
Raheem Mostert has already done it in the NFL. Hell, sure. Myles Gaskin has kind of done it in the NFL. We know Sony Michel's coming off of a 900-yard season. You know, it's a crowded group, you know? So it's hard for the rookie, but I think we're burying the lead. If we're going to consider fullbacks running backs, Alec Ingold's going to play a lot.
Is he?
A lot, yes. He's going to play.
Okay. Well, unfortunately, I want to stop you before you say too much about that, because you cannot, it's almost, you literally can't talk about Alec Ingold's involvement in the offense without speaking, without giving away things about personnel groupings. Like it's one of those positions, but that's interesting. You think he's going to play a lot. Okay. We got to flip to the defensive side.
One last thing on Alec Ingold. Do you like fullbacks running 40 yards down the field, catching passes?
Absolutely.
You're going to like this offense.
Nice. Well, you know what? You're not allowed to say this. I want to ask you, has he gotten any carries? Like, have you seen him get carries?
And you know what? That's a good question. No, Alec Ingold has not carried the football this camp.
Because I got this. This is the question that I have about the running backs, is when we get into situations. Okay, forget like the third and inches type of situation where we can go quarterback sneak or even do the weird Durham Smythe, you know.
To be fair, let me elaborate. Alec Ingold has been in the red non-contact jersey all camp.
Oh, so. Okay. Fair. All right.
So he's just basically running around out there, blocking people and not getting hit. You know,
that's fair. Because I'm wondering, you know, when we get to the third and a long yard, or third and two, or those sorts of situations, or we get near the goal line, but not on the goal line, not inches away from the goal line, but we're talking about like 2-3 yards from the goal line. You need a hammer, right, as a running back. Mm-hmm. And that is not Raheem Mostert. That is not Chase Edmonds. And that is not certainly, you know, it's not Myles Gaskin. It is not Sony Michel. I'm sorry. Some people might agree and disagree with me. But so who's that going to be? Who's that going to be?
I really don't know. But I will say this. Jerry Doakes has had some successful carries in the goal line the last couple of days. But I don't think that it's going to be him either.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think third and one, I think, is an obvious down for them. Their quarterback is pretty big guy. I would say he's carrying 220 pounds. Just tuck it in and let's run that sneak again, right? Mm-hmm.
Right. I wanted to ask you now, we have talked quite a bit about the offense actually in a couple podcasts, and we do, understandably, we spent a lot of time talking about the offense in Miami because we haven't had a good one in like 20 years. So now the defense, we brought back all the coaching staff. We know all about it, right? What are we looking like on the defensive line? You've mentioned already. I mean, it's probably don't need to spend a lot of time talking about how unblockable Christian Wilkins is, because we've been talking about that. Yeah. We know who Zach Sealer is. We know who Raekwon Davis is. Although Raekwon Davis looks to be a little bit slimmer. And that's interesting.
And he said it was by design that he felt sluggish last year. He wanted to be quicker. He felt he wasn't quick enough last year. Mm-hmm. To play at his best,
you know, and you know what's interesting about this, that because it's turning into a theme. You know, you're talking about guys on offense. I mean, it's not just Rob Hunt that's talking about losing weight. I think Austin Jackson has talked about losing weight. I think you know, well, Preston Williams, the unhappy one, he said that he came, he was like 230 pounds last year.
Yes.
And that this year he came down to like 210 or something like that. So I mean, 6'5", you know, he's lanky. But I think of speed, particularly on offense. Do you see that bleeding into the defense? Do you see that with other guys, guys other than Raekwon Davis? Are they coming in better shape, a little bit lighter, a little bit sleeker?
Yeah, absolutely. Andrew Van Ginkel, add Andrew Van Ginkel to that list of guys who got slimmer, sleeker, and wanted to get slimmer, sleeker. Jalen Phillips is just, he has more of a man body than before. On the defensive line, you know, we should mention this. Adam Butler was waived because of...
Yeah, he was.
But he was designated failed physical. That basically just means he wasn't ready for training camp due to an injury. Mm-hmm. He decided to use his salary slot to try to save a couple of bucks that they might use in the regular season. Who knows? Maybe, who knows if they bring him back, but more likely than
that's
going
to... That's something that they might bring him back. I mean, that is very possible.
Yes. So, you know, does that really hurt their depth? I don't really think so, because you want Zach Sealer playing. You want Zach Sealer, Christian Wilkins, Raekwon Davis playing.
Well, you know, and John Jenkins is no slouch out there. I mean, he is what he is. He's the big ugly, right? You know, he's the big dude.
By the way, Underwear Olympics champion Jordan Williams hasn't had the best of times the last 2 days.
I wanted to get there because you had talked about Jordan Williams before. You said that he, you know, Underwear Olympics, as you said, you know, getting off the bus, he looks pretty good. But it seems like, you know, and particularly reading your own practice reports on OnlyFans, which, by the way, $3 a month, OnlyFans, reading your practice reports, you talk a little bit about Nebraska Ben Still.
Yeah.
A little bit. Is he, and, you know, I should just say this, because to get this out there, I mean, he's 6'4 and 300 pounds, and he ran below a 5.040.
And you can notice that when he's playing out there.
And a 9'8" broad jump, you know, and with a 4.29 shuttle, a 7.45. I mean, these are like the relative athletic score on him is good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know?
So it is like is really, really good. So he's an athlete. And are you saying that that's showing up?
Yeah. You could see it. You see it on the field, and you know, every once in a while you notice, you look at the field and, you know, not to take a dump on anybody, but you look at Benito Jones and there's maybe 100 Benito Jones in the NFL, which is, you know, which is not a, you know, that's not a crime. That's not a knock. You made it to the NFL. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, it's not a knock to say you look like an NFL player, but right. I mean, you know,
but sometimes you look at a guy and you're like, okay, he's different, right? Like, this guy's different. Like, among athletes, he's a little bit better than the rest. And Ben Still looks like a guy that, yeah, like, you're going to want to give him snaps. Just like another guy that we've talked about ad nauseum, and that's Porter Gustin. Like, he's showing up today, and he's beginning to show up even more and more because the snaps are moving up. So that's another guy that's starting to flash. And one last guy that, you know, and I'll mention it since I moved this off of the defensive line and onto edge players. I was prepared to have a hot take on Melvin Ingram coming into today's podcast. I think I told you about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just obvious. He could not care less about those individual unit drills or those indie drills or the 7-on-7s, all that stuff. Or the install, but when they play 11 versus 11, he flashes all over the place. The guy can play football. It's as simple as that. He plays football. He's a good football player. Okay. Just don't ask him to run around in shorts. He's going to look average to bad. And he's going to get me to say something stupid on this podcast. Like, you know what? They might cut him, but not anymore.
And then. Okay, so it's becoming obvious. I mean, we talked about it before that
he's gonna play a lot.
He might be sort of a turn it up in the playoffs kind of guy, but you know, those kind of guys, it's fractal, right? I mean, in practice, it's like I don't give a shit about drills.
Yes.
Then we get into the 11-on-11. And it's like, oh, okay, here you go.
Yeah. Yeah. 11 versus 11. You could tell, like, okay, this guy can play football. Like, he's really, really good. You know? And let me just say, I think they hit on Channing Tindall. This is a super athlete. He's a really good-looking athlete. Travis Wingfield had a play where he had Cedric Wilson and Channing Tindall 40 yards down the field, stride for stride. That actually
happened. Yeah, I saw that. So you saw that. You saw
I saw that. And really good athlete. You know, put it this way. He walked past me without pads, without his number and anything. And then Safa Dean walked past me and goes, "Who's that?" And I just looked at him and I go, "That's Eric Azukama." And then when I look back and I go, "Wait a minute, that's not Eric Azukama. That's Channing Tindall." That's how sleek and athletic he looks. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, is it a redshirt year? Probably. But keep it in mind. Like, I don't think they'll be hopeless if he's pressed into action this year. I think if he's pressed into action this year, they're going to have a pretty good athlete to mold. And this group I thought was not going to be very good this year. I thought it was going to be the weakness of the team. There's a couple of guys I like on this group. I think Sam Agovon he's an NFL player. Like, you know, you could do a lot worse than LB5 Sam Agovon. Okay. And Darius Hodge, he might not make the team because I think he's right there on that edge. But Darius Hodge is kind of Sam Agovon light. So, you know, and he kind of plays the same way too. Really active body, good special teams player. And on a lot of special teams snaps. Blitzer.
Though, right.
Yeah, so both guys are essentially the same thing. And then, of course, you know, we have our Orlando Roberts, who's also on the maintenance program. And, you know, Jerome Baker is always Jerome Baker. And Duke Riley last year found a role, and he's fulfilling it once again this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's a bad group anymore. I think it's, you know, overall average group, which when you have a stellar group like your defensive line and an elite group, like your secondary, you can have an average linebacking core and have a pretty damn good defense, I think.
Okay. So we've covered that. If we wanted to get into other parts of the defense, like what else is standing out to you about, you know, maybe in the secondary or more in the linebackers unit? Like, is there anything, I mean, cause keep in mind, this is a defense that we know.
Yes.
These are defenders that we know. You know, these are guys that we know. Duke Riley, for example, even though he's not even, you know, a starter necessarily.
Yeah. And Josh Boyer laid it down. He laid down the gauntlet. He said, this is not a bug, it's a feature. We bring pressures on third down. This is what we do.
Yep. Yep.
You know, and the question was asked very specifically from me. You know, is the emergence of a Jalen Phillips as a sack artist, would that change your philosophy on third down?
Mm-hmm.
Said no, this is what we do. We're gonna bring pressures, like, you know, that's just what we do. So,
you know, yeah,
they're gonna blitz.
What's interesting about that is I'm interested, just as an aside, in what they do in second down in particular. So because there's some differences in how they were handling second versus third down at the beginning of the year, and for a while, you remember that last year they had third down was bad for them.
Yeah,
you know, and so it almost seemed like they were going super aggressive, uber aggressive on second down, and then turning around and not being as aggressive on third down, and then just giving up the conversion. And so I wonder if I wonder how that's going to be. So we know that Brandon Jones, or sorry, not Brandon Jones, Byron Jones, too many Jones. Byron Jones not playing. He's not practicing out there. And we, you know, Xavien Howard, I'm sure he's being given his maintenance days. So we're out there, we're seeing the likes of Nick Needham, Trill Williams, Noah Igbinoghene, who's a guy that I'm sure the fans will want to hear about. What are these guys at corner looking like? Start with Needham, because you had something to say about him earlier today, I noticed.
Yeah, Nick Needham was my player of the day today. Simply put, he was perfect today. He did nothing wrong, allowed absolutely nothing. He had one PBU, no picks. But, you know, Tua doesn't throw interceptions anymore, by the way. Okay. That's become a feature of this camp.
Thank you for saying that, because he's going to throw five tomorrow.
Okay. Well, it's impossible for him to throw five tomorrow because they're not practicing tomorrow.
Oh, that's well, good. There's a bonus.
So the streak continues tomorrow of no interceptions for Tua Tagovailoa.
But do you remember one of the first days of camp or whatever last year? He threw like five picks or something like that. In the torrential downpour, which by the way, he was also bad in conditions in that Tennessee game. So maybe we,
yeah, do, that was a thing, right? That was a
maybe
thing.
We do pay attention to that after all, but you know, it's really remarkable to see, especially cause I'm looking at all these other camp reports from all these other teams and I'm just hearing all this like lackluster crap, like, you know, more frustrations for the offense, more, you know, so-and-so Zach Wilson's looking terrible. You know, all these quarterbacks are just, you know, struggling to.
Well, let me preface this by saying that there is no more negative media than the San Francisco 49ers media. Like they absolutely, they hate that team. No matter how many fucking games they win, they just hate that team. There was a tweet today that says, chalk up another terrible day for Trey Lance. That was how the tweet started. Talk about.
Well, I'm just glad that we're not having that conversation right now because we could be, and we have in the past. We have, make no mistake. So, what about Noah? I mean, we got to know, does he look like he's coming on or what?
Well, he has one thing going against him. Okay, one thing for him and one thing going against him. The one thing that he does have going for him, he's getting a lot of reps. Sam Madison's giving him a lot of exclusive instruction. I still notice some technique flaws. Now, the bad news. He has to guard Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle all camp.
Yeah.
It's simply, if he looks great, start trading Byron Jones. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know it's popular to say, oh, he just got smoked again. Are you watching who he's guarding all camp?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's times where he's out there for 16 reps, and of those 16 reps, all of them have been against Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. So it's going to be hard for him to look good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, maybe I was fooled a little bit today because Tyreek Hill had a maintenance day today, so he wasn't playing. Jaylen Waddle was, and Nick Needham was perfect, so that's why I gave him the practice player of the day. So I guess our offense was a little bit easier to play against today, but Noah Igbinoghene, noticeable improvement, a lot of instruction from Sam Madison, and that can't be bad. Is he giving up big plays? Absolutely. But to who? To Tyreek Hill, Jaylen Waddle. I just think it's going to happen, you know? Interesting to note, Tua tried to hit Jaylen Waddle one-on-one with Xavien Howard today. One of the few snaps that Xavien Howard played, and Xavien Howard got the PBU. On the
deep. Oh, nice.
I don't know if you saw the video, but Jaylen Waddle is jogging into the end zone like, here's another one. And Xavien Howard comes out of nowhere and says, nope, not this one.
Nice. Well, at least he's still Xavien Howard.
And Tua Tagovailoa also let a cat out of the bag. And let me see if you're going to be able to guess this one.
What is
the fat? He let the cat out of the bag on one statistic today. Tua Tagovailoa. Are you ready?
Yeah, okay.
Who's been the fastest defensive back on the Dolphins?
Okay, because they, keeping in mind that the reason that they know this is their, again, culture of speed thing. They have the RFID chips on, and they have all the GPS data and so on of all these players. And evidently they make a thing of it, telling the players every day, you know, how fast they all were and who was the fastest and all. So Tua does actually know who's been the fastest. And yes. You're saying the fastest overall defensive back.
Yes.
Of anybody.
Of anybody. Safeties, cornerbacks, all of them.
Corners. I'm going to, you know, just based on what I know of the roster, if it's, you know, by rights, it probably should be Noah Igbinoghene because he is, I think, you know, on a track the fastest, but I don't think he plays to that speed because he's still quite unsure of himself. But is it Javon Holland?
No. You want to know who it was?
Who is it?
Kean Crossen.
Kean Crossen, really?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Kean Crossen has been the fastest defensive back in all of camp.
Well, no wonder Josh Boyer likes the guy so much.
Okay. Oddly enough, Mike McDaniel mentioned who was the fastest player overall in camp, and it was Tyreek Hill. He says he's been clocked several times at 23, and he says, and in his words, that doesn't happen. Like, that's not normal.
Yeah, that's not normal.
He also had a great quote that I don't think people made enough about, where they asked him about play calling with this offense, and he's like, it's like having three yachts and not knowing which one to take.
Yeah.
That's a nice one, right?
I don't even know what to say about that.
Yeah, it's an embarrassment of riches, in other words, right? So I guess, who are the three yachts? Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill, and what? Mike Gesicki? Those are the three yachts?
I don't know. That's the fair question. Now that we have,
we know mystery. Who two of the yachts are, right?
Yeah, sure. But and by the way, about the speed thing, the thing that I've brought up on Twitter several times is I go back to the Super Bowl that the 49ers Chiefs played in, against each other. I was at the Super Bowl in Miami. One of the events during the Super Bowl was a little presentation by Zebra Technologies, who does like the GPS data. And so they were presenting, and they were like, they were talking about who the fastest teams in the NFL are. And so, they said right there that the number one and number two speed offenses in the NFL are the Chiefs and the 49ers. Like, and they were facing each other in the Super Bowl, and it was no mistake. So we're talking about speed of the person who's carrying the ball. Number one and number two were the Chiefs and the 49ers. And what I find really interesting about that is Miami brought in the two reasons that those were the two top speed teams or offenses in the NFL that year. You know, the Chiefs were the top speed offense in the NFL that year because of Tyreek Hill. And the 49ers were the top speed offense in the NFL that year because of Raheem Mostert. So when we talk about like how speed is serious in Miami, that's how serious they are about the speed. And then you add into it, you know, Jalen Waddle and his ridiculous speed. And of course, Mike Gesicki is clearly, you know, a top five tight end in terms of just pure speed. I think that's the speed gig laid out. But I think it's interesting you're talking about Keon Crossan as the top speed defensive back, because I don't think he's a 40 time guy, if I'm not mistaken. So this is really all about his playing speed.
I'm
full of shit. I'm sorry. He is a 40 time guy. He's a 4.33 guy.
Okay, there you have it.
You know, for some reason, I was positive he was a 4.5 guy. I was really positive with that.
Evidently not.
No, he's legitimately the fastest guy. The fastest guy on the track in this case is the fastest guy in the secondary. Yeah. And so don't listen to me. I'm just absolutely full of shit.
Now let me ask you a question. Do you think that having Sam Madison in your ear all practice, and we're talking about Noah Igbinoghi here, do you think that helps or hurts him? Is he a guy that just might play better just on instinct, or having that constant instruction is probably hurting his game? Do you think?
From what I know about Noah Igbinoghi, it's that he needs a lot of instruction. Okay. He really needs a lot of instruction, but I don't know how he handles it. You know, that's the thing. And I get a feeling that this is a guy that gets in his own head. When somebody else is in his head too, you know, that might not always help him. In the end, he just may not be an NFL player, but we'll have to see.
There was a rep today, and there's video of it if you look for it. Let me see if I can find it. No, I'm not going to be able to find it now. It's going to take me too long. But there's video of a play that River Craycraft makes over Noah Igbinoghi. They're playing. It looks like cover zero, but it's not. They're playing quarters. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the problem here is that inside of Noah Igbinoghi, he has Javon Holland. or I believe it was Eric Rowe. And Eric Rowe breaks for the flat, and Noah Igbinoghene stares at him. And at the moment he stares at him, Craycraft runs right past him, and Tua hits him for a touchdown, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has that knack of paying way too much attention to what everybody else is doing on the defense and not to what he's supposed to be doing. And it's pretty simple. And look, quarters is something that you run in high school. You play this in high school. That he wouldn't know this is just odd to me, but he has to run with his man. Mm-hmm. He cannot leave his man because there is no safety in that defense that they were playing. You got to run with your man. And that's just a busted coverage right there that they allowed six to River Craycraft of all people.
But that's tough because, you know, they are asking and in quarters, it's true. You have to be aware. You have to stay aware of everything that's going on the field. And if you have, and that has been the struggle for him, that has been, you know, if he were just allowed to man up on his guy, and, you know, and just dog him and he would be and use his athleticism in his favor, he would probably be better. But it's the awareness that's been lacking. It's the overall defensive instincts. And when those guys when they struggle with that, then, you know, what you end up seeing is they end up having to pay too much of attention to it. And then they lose what they're supposed to be doing. Because they're, you know, their head's on a swivel, they're big eyes looking around everywhere, and that's part of the reason that I doubt it. But it just seems like he's stuck, and I hope that he does, because he was a first round pick for a reason, and I liked him, a lot, but you know, I don't know, but we compare him to somebody else who was unheralded, in Trill Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you see that coming out? How's Trill been doing?
He's in a making pitch, a lot of noise. He's in a pitched battle, but I would say Noah Igbinoghene is winning that right now. But if Noah Igbinoghene, I think, is getting helped a lot by that first round draft pick status. Now, is that unfair? No, it's not. You know, you actually have an investment there, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if he were, let's say, a sixth round pick, I would say Trill Williams has more value because he's actually a pretty good special teams player.
Okay.
While Noah Igbinoghene is, you know, not to be unfair to the guy, he's a tragic special teams player. He's just not good. He's not good as a special teams player. He misses tackles. He can't block people. He's not even good as a gunner or as a blocker on the gun side. So he's a bad special teams player. So his way onto the team is by playing in the defense, playing in the secondary. Trill Williams can play, you know, can be a special teams player, and, you know, he can contribute to the team that way. Mm. So if that were a consideration, I would say Trill Williams is ahead. As of right now, I would say Noah Igbinoghene is playing a little bit better as a corner because he's getting more opportunities. And like I said, I am grading him on a curve because it is Tyreek Hill. It is Jalen Waddle that he's going up against exclusively all camp. So I'm grading on a curve and I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, but eventually that does run out. And they do play against Tampa Bay this weekend. They have two practices on Wednesday and Thursday. That's going to be interesting. I'm pretty sure the Bucs are not going to take it easy on him. I'm pretty sure that he's going to have to face Mike Evans and Russell Gage, who supposedly is looking really, really good in Bucs camp. So, you know, I guess we get to judge him further there. But he's in a battle, and, you know, Nick Needham is getting played, you know, basically everywhere on the defense except safety.
You're not allowed to say.
I'm not allowed to say. So I guess they're thinking about it. You know, they're thinking about, you know, maybe we have to go elsewhere past these two guys.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, just in case, you know, that Byron Jones is not ready to go. As far as the rest of the guys, you know, Verone McKinley, way too quiet for my taste. You know, you have opportunities, even if you play on third team, you know, not that you're going to play, that he's playing on third team, but if he were, he would have an opportunity to make more plays than what he has, and he hasn't. The two guys that have actually looked noticeable, just basically because of what they look like and how they are athletically, is Elijah Hamilton and Quincy Wilson. They look like something. I want to see them play in the preseason. And who knows? Maybe remember they're going to keep what, 9 defensive backs, 10 maybe. What did they keep last year? Wasn't it 10 or 11?
I don't even remember. It's probably 11 though.
Yeah, but they keep a large number. So, yeah. You know, Elijah Hamilton, you know, Quincy Wilson. Yeah, why not, right?
But last question. How good is Javon Holland and how good is he going to be?
Yeah, freakish. Like this guy's, he's something. Range from hell. He's a player minute. Like this guy and now he's, you know, his balls have dropped. You know what I mean? He's an alpha now. Like he's talking. You know what I'm saying? Like last year, you could see that he was like, oh, you know, that's Xavier Howard over there. That's Byron Jones. That's Eric Rowe. What are they saying? You know, can I say this, sir? You know, you could see that he was deferring. This year, fuck all those guys. I'm just as good as these guys. And I'm going to talk and I'm gonna bitch when, you know, when we don't run the defense correctly. Today, very interesting. Josh Boyer and Xavier Howard having a very long, long, drawn out conversation. Who comes walking over to join the long, drawn out conversation? Javon Holland. So
those two have a relationship, right?
Yeah,
Javon Holland and Xavier Howard. Howard brought him, I believe, to the Pro Bowl. Was that right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, you could see that they're, you know, they're thick and thin. They're up and down the field, like, you know, they're a pair.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, you know, he's different. You could tell when a guy is, when it's different, where this looks like old hat to him, you know. And some of the media were speculating early on in camp, like, man, this guy's like really, really full of himself this year. And I was thinking, like, yeah, that's usually what happens when you know you're like really, really good. Like you know, that arrogance that comes with great players. You just don't think he's there yet. He thinks he's there already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he has that good arrogance, that good alpha vibe. So yeah, arrow way up on Javon Holland. Absolutely. Okay.
Well, this has been like extraordinarily long.
I just saw his name. I got to say something about this. Brandon Jones, if he drops an interception on Friday, it'll be 4 practices in a row with a dropped interception.
Oh, Jesus.
And I think that's a new league record. I'm pretty sure.
That is both good and bad. Like,
well, the good news is that 2 of them have been against Teddy Bridgewater. 1 was against Tua Tagovailoa. Okay.
Mm.
So, you know.
Well, Brandon, I'm just saying, you know, great that he's around. It's great that he's around the ball so much.
Obviously. Yeah, catch the goddamn thing already.
But you got it. You got to catch it.
Oh, and Thomas Morstead today running up and he ran at least 10 gassers today. Like he was putting in a workout for whatever reason. Don't ask me why. But he was putting in a workout today, Thomas Morstead.
Okay. Well, this is where I draw the line. We're not talking about punters or long snappers. So, you know, fuck off about that. Is there anybody on roster just that I didn't cover for you that, you know, you just really wanted to say something about this guy?
One last guy, Skylar Thompson. Not terrible.
Not terrible.
No, like, you know, that's a camp that you know, it's a camp hand, you know, like I could see it, you know, will he start an NFL game in his life? Maybe not. Will he be rostered on an NFL team? Yes. You know, will he eventually be a backup somewhere? Probably. So, yeah, you know, Chase Daniel made what, like $60 million in his career? Still making money. You know, there are worse jobs than backup quarterback in the NFL.
You know, and Matt Cassel would have had the most brilliant career if he never got thrust into the starting position, because he was like the perfect backup that everybody would have. He would have been passed around the NFL for like 12 years, never played it down.
Yeah.
After being a backup at USC.
Yeah, so Skylar Thompson, can't wait to see him play next Saturday against the Bucks. Should be fun. Like, nice. He should be fun to watch. You know, he's better than I thought. I thought he was like a nothing quarterback, athletic kid, good arm. Mm-hmm. He's a good camp hand.
He's a good camp hand, as Skylar Thompson. You know, we were quite skeptical about him too. So, so that's an interesting.
Now, will he be able to duplicate the heroics of what the hell was his name last year?
I was just going to comment. Obviously, he's no Reed Sinnett.
No, not Reed Sinnett.
Obviously.
Well, Reed Sinnett. What was that?
Reed Sinnett.
The guy threw for 400 yards and had the game-winning drive inside of 40 seconds. Reed Sinnett was a beast.
Let's be honest. Let's be realistic. He's not Reed Sinnett.
Man, whoa. Are you ready for this? You ready for this? They do play the Eagles.
Are you gonna see Reed Sinnett with the Eagles? Is he even still there?
I'm pretty sure he's still there. Okay, Reed Sinnett and the Eagles will be down here in 2 weeks for practices. Okay, Skylar Thompson versus Reed Sinnett, 13 versus 13.
Can't wait.
I'm for it. Can't wait. That's gonna be a lot of fun. All right, Chris. All right.
I'll let you take your roll back on outro us out.
All right, great. That's it. There is no more. The next time we talk to you, we'll have more camp talk, and we'll be talking Bucks, Dolphins. Yes, they play a game next week, and we'll talk about it. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.